6:23. Bhakya Vishya Bhano Yasmin.
Vachayannamakirtayan.
Vachayannamakirtayan.
Kalevaram yogi.
Kalevaram yogi.
Mucyate kama karma bihi.
Mucyate kama karma bihi.
Bhaktya vishya mano yasmin.
Bhaktya vishya mano yasmin.
Vachayannamakirtayan.
Vachayannamakirtayan.
Chajan kale varam yogi. Mucyate kama karma bhi.
Mucyate kama karma bhi.
Bhaktya. With devout attention.
With devout attention.
Avishya.
Avishya.
Meditating. Manaha,
mind,
yasmin,
in whose,
vacha,
by words,
yat,
Krishna,
nama,
holy name,
kirtayat,
by chanting,
jajan,
yajan.
Quitting.
Kalevaram.
This material body. Yogi.
The devotee.
Mucyate.
Gets release.
Kama karma bihi.
From fruitive activities.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead, who appears in the mind of the devotee by attentive devotion and meditation and by chanting of the holy name, releases the devotee from the bondage of fruitive activities at the time of his quitting the material body. Purport. Yoga means concentration of the mind, detached from all other subject matter. And actually such concentration is samadhi, or 100% engagement in the service of the Lord. And one who concentrates his attention in that matter is called a yogi. Such a yogi, devotee of the Lord, engages himself 24 hours daily in the service of the Lord, so that his full attention is engrossed with the thoughts of the Lord in ninefold devotional service, namely hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, praying, becoming a voluntary servant, carrying out orders, establishing a friendly relationship, or offering all that one may possess in the service of the Lord. By such practice of yoga, or linking up in the service of the Lord, one is recognized by the Lord himself, as it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita concerning the highest perfectional stage of samadhi. The Lord calls such a rare devotee the best among all the yogis. Such a perfect yogi is enabled by the divine grace of the Lord to concentrate his mind upon the Lord with a perfect sense of consciousness. And then, by chanting his holy name, before quitting the body, the yogi is at once transferred by the internal energy of the Lord to one of the eternal planets where there is no question of material life and its concomitant factors. In material existence, a living being has to endure the material conditions of threefold miseries, life after life, according to his fruitive work, Such material life is produced by material desires only. Devotional service to the Lord does not kill the natural desires of the living being, but they are applied in the right cause of devotional service. This qualifies the desire to be transferred to the spiritual sky. General Bhishma Dev is referring to a particular type of yogi called Bhakti Yogi. And he was fortunate enough to have the Lord directly in his presence before quitting his material body. He therefore desired that the Lord stay before his view in the following verses. Bhakti-ya avesha mano yasmin. The subject here is the yogi. A yogi is a person who is redirecting his attention away from the ordinary delusions of material life and focusing his attention rather on the reality. Tamasi ma jyotir gomaya. Leave the darkness and go to the light. Give up delusion and turn toward the reality. That in general is what a yogi is. Then Patanjali in his textbook defines yoga as yoga indriya samyamaha. Yoga is control of the senses. That's the yoga as a functional process. That's the means of yoga. But the purpose of yoga is what yoga is as a purposeful activity is to turn from the ignorance to the darkness, and the ignorance to the light. And the means of doing it is controlling the senses and the mind. Bhishma Dev is not, that's a general idea of yoga. Bhishma is talking very specifically here. As Prabhupada says, a particular kind of yoga. Bhaktiya avesha mano. So the mind must be focused in the absolute truth. This is dharana. After one has purified the channels of the life airs by asanas, and then brought the life airs and the mind under control, when you can see the sense control is first. The external senses must first be brought under control. If one is not even practicing the yamas and niyamas, if one is living an unregulated life, there's no question of yoga. No question. If you're breaking the basic laws of nature and indulging in sinful activities, then one is suffering the actions from that and can, no question of bringing the mind and senses under control. It's like, you know, how can you drive the chariot, or how can you ride your car if you just sit there, you know, and don't take the steering wheel in your hands and don't put your feet on the floor to control the brakes and the accelerator. You just let the car drive itself. Then there's no control of the car and you will cause harm to yourself and others. You're going to get yourself killed. You have to take control of the car if you're going to be driving it. You have to hold on to the steering wheel and have your feet on the floor. So if you're not going to control your senses, if you're not going to control your external activities, if you're just going to be totally unregulated, then there's no question of yoga. No question of spiritual advancement. Okay, be a materialist and see what it's like. But don't pretend to be a yogi if you cannot control your senses. Indriya samaya mam. And then there's various means to do that. So the standard Ashtanga system formulated by Patanjali Rishi involves, first of all, following some regulative principles, major and minor. Just begin to externally regulate your life, keeping clean, avoiding sinful activities, dealing decently with other people. These are in the categories of yama and niyama. Asteyam, not stealing from other people, not envying other people. These are among the yamas and niyamas. And what speak of not wasting your semen and so on, brahmacharya. These are basic regulative principles. Then one can practice asanas after one has established himself in a basically regulated life, which is just living like a civilized human being. It's nothing special in itself, nothing transcendental in the yamas and niyamas. It's just, first of all, start off behaving like a civilized human being. Then you can begin practicing yoga. You can start to bring the senses and the life air under control by practicing asanas, sitting positions, and yogic exercises. When the senses are brought under control, then you can bring the life air under control. And when the life air is brought under control by pranayama, that brings the mind under control. If the air is your air of breath, the air of life, is regulated by pranayama, then the mind naturally also becomes regulated. Then, with a controlled mind, one can begin to focus that mind by pratyahara, giving up all superficial engagements, turning the mind away from nonsense, thoughts and feelings, then focusing on a single point. This is what's described here, bhaktya veshu mano yasmin. Fixing one's mind on a particular point, that particular point is yasmin. Relative pronoun, what's the antecedent? Sarvatmana samadrisho, the super soul, who is also identified in the verse after that as Krishna. Krishna the super soul, yasmin, upon him one should fix one's mind. Fix it. Think about him. Don't think about other things. Mayeva mana adhatsva. Mayi buddhim niveshaya. Always think about me. You may think about your service, you may think about devotees of me, but don't think about things that are opposed to me or irrelevant to me. And mayi buddhim niveshaya. Fix your intelligence on me. Intelligence is the goal setter. So all your goals should be aimed at me. All your purposes should be for my satisfaction and my glorification, Krishna is saying. That is the yoga dharana in the bhakti yoga system. Fixing the mind on one point. And the yogi, the bhakti yogi, who can do this, will be liberated when he leaves his body. If not before, but certainly with such a fixed mind, even if you haven't progressed beyond that step number 6, and you haven't gone to step 7 and 8, that's enough to gain liberation in the bhakti yoga system. If you can fix your mind on Krishna, even if you haven't developed ecstatic attraction and love, if you just attained nishtha, then that guarantees liberation. You won't take birth again. At least you won't take a material birth. You may have to take birth one more time as a Vaishnava and finish up the business. But you're out of the cycle of material birth and death. Like a Vrijbasi, a person who dies, not even Vrijbasi, someone who dies in the Holy Dham is supposed to get liberation. But if you commit offenses, you'll have to take birth one more time, maybe as an animal, and live again in the Holy Dham, which is not really a material birth anyway. So like that, an advanced Vaishnava who's not completely advanced may have to take one more birth, just to wrap up and finish the last details of his perfection. That's not really remaining in the cycle of birth and death. That's just one last time. Sometimes devotees who are almost completely perfect don't even take birth. They're in the womb and there's a miscarriage. Prabhupada referred to this, that sometimes the devotee women have miscarriages. Those are almost perfect devotees, 99% perfect devotees who have simply had to sit in the womb for a few months and then go back to Godhead. That's how it works. If you can simply fix your mind on Krishna, then you don't have to be born again in the material existence. Bhishmadev, for all the other things he's aware of, this is what he's thinking of at the last minute. It's not that he's just a sentimental Vaishnava who doesn't know anything else. He knows everything else. He knows all the ramifications of Dharma. He knows all kinds of Dharma. Maybe he's not familiar with Adharma. You know, Duryodhan could tell you about that, about Adharma. But Bhishma knows everything about Dharma, about progressive life. Everything, all different varieties of it. Dana Dharma, Raja Dharma, Moksha Dharma, Vibhagashaha, Stri Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma. So he knows all about how to give charity, how to act as a king, what women should do and what you should do for and in relationship with women, and what you should do in relationship with the Supreme Lord and his devotees, Bhagavad Dharma. Bhishmadeva is an expert in all these categories, and he gave elaborate instructions to Yudhishthira about all these matters. But what is it? Anyway, he's going to give up all this. It's now time. The sun is passing into the northern hemisphere. The Makara Sankranti? No, it's the other one. Makara Sankranti. Which I think we've just had. Yeah, it's just passed. January? Okay. Yeah, the solstice. The other, when the sun is at the highest peak, is we've just passed. Okay. That is the moment that Bhishmadeva is choosing to leave his body. He has the choice. He can sit on that bed of arrows forever if he wants to, and only has to leave his body when he wants to. But he wants to leave his body. He wants to go back to Vaikuntha. But he wants to do it at his chosen. He's going to do it at his chosen moment. And the most auspicious time is at the Makara Sankranti, when the sun is passing into the northern hemisphere. At least, the sun should be in the northern hemisphere. That Krishna says, Uttarayanam, Tatra Chandra, Tatra Brahma, Brahma Vidojanaha. Those who know Brahman, if they leave their body when the sun is in the northern hemisphere, then they won't take birth again. So Bhishma doesn't want to take birth again. So the sun has not yet, while the battle was being fought, the sun was not yet in the northern hemisphere. I guess the battle was fought in December? Okay. So he had to wait a few weeks until the sun crept up and crossed the equator and went into the northern hemisphere. Then he left at just that time, as soon as the sun entered the northern hemisphere, which is a very auspicious time anyway. When that time came, although Bhishmadeva had spent days or weeks speaking to Yudhishthira, that was it. He stopped. He finished his talking and turned his attention simply to Krishna. He said his last prayers and left his body in the presence of Krishna. That is perfect yoga. Even though he had a tragic life in the sense that he could not protect Dharma because of the vow he made to his father, for his father not to assume the throne. Therefore, he could not properly protect the Dharmic principles against the irreligion introduced by Dhritarashtra and his sons. He could not stand up against, he couldn't stop Dhritarashtra, his brother. He couldn't stop Duryodhana because he was powerless in his situation. And he suffered so much because of that. And everybody suffered because of that. And so it's a tragic life, but here's the perfection of that life. Even though so many troubles in your life, so many frustrations and disappointments and failures, still your life is a complete success in the end, if you remember Krishna. So in spite of all our troubles, we should remember Krishna right now and practice it, so that at the time of death, our life will, on the bottom line, will be a success. Okay, I'll have to stop now. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Is it right, as you say, if someone asks, Vishnudeva was waiting for Uttarayana, then is it right for us to say, actually he was just waiting for Vishnu to come?
Both. Yes, it is right. But I'm sure he had both in mind. It's just, you know, they concurred.
If we say in a way that he was not that much really concerned about Uttarayana as much as he was concerned about waiting for Krishna.
Okay, yes. 90 Sviti Parta Janam Yogi Muyati Kaschana. The statement is a devotee, a yogi who knows these two paths, the Uttarayana and the Dakshinayana, he's not bewildered. But the way that Prabhupada interprets it, it means a devotee doesn't care. He can leave his body anytime. A devotee doesn't care for liberation. Okay, technically you don't get your liberation if you die at the wrong time. But a devotee doesn't care. Krishna wants to keep me in this world, let him keep me. So he doesn't have to calculate the time of his leaving his body. Whenever Krishna wants to take me, let him take me. Because he doesn't even care for liberation. Yes, so you're right. I mean, what he was concerned about is Krishna's presence. Yes?
I've heard that Bhutanam Rupak, one of your charges, that this actually refers to the name of Krishna. Uttara was the protector, was protected by Krishna.
Yeah, so Ayanam can mean shelter, yes. Okay, even though it's called Uttarayanam. Ah, okay. Acharya's interpretation. Thank you. Yes?
I mean, in a case of almost perfected devotees, like Ananda brought Raja as monkeys or
devotee families, yeah.
What do they perfect? Are there any traces of karma left?
No, once you pass the stage of nishtha, there's really no karma. There's just shadow of karma. You're relieved from your karma. That's really up to Krishna. There's no fixed mechanical calculation of when you're relieved of all karma. It's at Krishna's discretion. Somewhere between the beginning of devotional service and the final perfection, Sarup city, you've relieved of all karma, but it's up to Krishna when that happens, to what percent and when your karma goes away, your prarabdha karma. You know, the karma that is not supposed to go away without suffering it. Krishna can take it away without your suffering it if he wants, at his discretion when he wants. There's no fixed time frame for that. It's not even fixed according to the stages of progression. In any stage, Krishna can relieve you to whatever extent he wants. But really, it's not karma that's our problem. Krishna can take care of our karma. It's that we still are not attracted. We haven't developed attraction to Krishna. We're not seriously interested in Krishna. And without that attraction, love won't develop. Even if we reach the stage of nishtha, we've cleaned out our life, and we're determined, but we're not seriously attracted. You know, so we have to finish up that business of becoming completely enamored with Krishna. You know, we spend so much time purifying ourselves, we don't have much time to be attracted to Krishna. So we have to get all that garbage out of the way and start really becoming attracted to Krishna. That may take us so much time that it gets extended into another lifetime. It could happen.
birth as a monkey help us develop?
Well, it's not. I don't think it's the ISKCON devotees that have to do that. It's the Mayavadis and Sahajas who are taking birth as monkeys. Okay, there are people, a lot of people in Vrajadham who are not following proper devotional service. They're the ones who take birth as monkeys and dogs and trees and pigs. And a proper devotee shouldn't have to take birth as an animal. A devotee who's faithfully following a proper Vaishnava authority, he may have to take birth in a Vaishnava family as a Vaishnava, as a human Vaishnava. Unless he commits some horrible offense, then he may have to take birth as an animal. But if he's following his guru and he's not a total nonsense, then he should take a human birth among Vaishnavas, if he has to take another birth. Okay. Yes, I'm important.
So this idea that Mayavadis probably who are living in Vrajadham, when they take birth as monkeys, so is it that...
I think monkeys, maybe the monkeys are mostly Sahajas and the trees are Mayavadis. But go ahead.
Is it that they see that, okay, it's horrible monkey birth, I've got it because of my misconceptions in my last life, and that will drive them to the proper conception, which is naturally available in Vrajadham?
Yeah, I don't know if in a monkey body he could think that out very clearly, but the idea is driven home, you know, maybe not consciously. He gets the idea by the, you know. Although he may not be able to think clearly, he can understand it's not pleasant being one of these monkeys when he actually experiences it. We think the monkeys are trouble. It's much more trouble to be a monkey. And that's why they're so horrible, because they're suffering. They're stealing from us because they're starving. Yes, Prabhupada.
One of the purpose, Srila Prabhupada says that after taking birth as an animal, there'll be another in hell.
Then human birth again?
A human birth.
Okay.
In which one will perfect himself.
Okay.
Punishment, but then there is also a human birth.
Yeah,
one consciously develops.
I think it's not wrong to say that animal birth in Vraja is normally the reaction for aparads.
Yeah.
Not so much for sins. Well, sins also. But especially a person who comes here at least pretending to do some devotional service and he commits aparads and sins, he's going to have to take birth as an animal. And then, as you say, Prabhupada says, then that's not it. You've got to take birth as a human being again.
But, and at the other places Prabhupada told that they go to spiritual world also, so more things are there.
Okay, maybe it's not the same for every case.
Yeah.
Anyway, you may have to take two more births in the Holy Dhamma. Anyway, that's still a little bit. Actually, also, that ashram behind the is Krishna Balaram guest house, Gaurini Tai Radhe Sham. Some devotee asked Prabhupada, are these sahajas going to go back to Godhead? And he said, yes, after 700 lifetimes. So a sannyasi who falls down, strictly speaking, has to take 700 births, and a complete sahaja has to take 700 births. Liberation is guaranteed because he's chanting the holy name, but he's chanting it the wrong way and offensively. Because of offenses, he may have to take 700 lifetimes to wipe out the offenses.
And then there's also Shilpati Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, he told that the jnanis will get the result of the personal liberation if they die in hell. And the karmis, they will get the result of fruit of activities, heaven. So
yes.
It's not spiritual world, it's not a default location, default destination for anyone who dies, but it also depends on
one's
aspiration.
One has to be a Vaishnava. You may be a mixed Vaishnava. You may be a Sahaja. But a Sahaja is still a kind of Vaishnava. But someone is a total just Jnani or Yogi or Karmi, then they'll get their perfection, the karmic and Jnanic perfection. Yes, ma'am?
Mahavajari also heard that he sort of didn't accept so much all this, that he was not hearing the liberation. because he said that the more important principle is the actual mood that they have.
Yes. Well, okay, but don't we accept it? If you're a devotee, even an imperfect devotee, then your liberation is guaranteed. It's just postponed by death in the Holy Dham, or even spending short time in the Holy Dham. You don't even have to die here. You have to come here and get the diarrhea for a few days, and then go back to your country. And those 1 week you spent in Vajradham guarantees your liberation. Walk around Govardhan Hill one time. That guarantees your love of God. But it may be postponed. It may be postponed for a few lifetimes. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.